Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. Thanks for joining me. Today, I'm talking to Kim Rain, an ADHD mind, body and confidence coach, and she empowers high-flying ADHDers who might feel held back in life or business because of their physical or mental health. She helps them to bulletproof their self-belief, increase their confidence and get on top of their ADHD so that they can level up without burning out. Now, that is a tall order. So, Kim, hello. Welcome to this week's podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Caro. I'm not too bad. I'm actually just recovering from the flu, which I've never had in my life before. So, I'm on a bit of a slow burn myself, but yeah, no, I'm really good.
Lovely to see you. So I think let's start at the beginning about ADHD, because I think neurodiversity and neurodivergence, these words are things that are becoming more talked about, certainly in mainstream media, although I don't think the actual thing has been sort of something new. It's been just bubbling under the surface and not actually talked about or recognized or known or diagnosed. So could you just start by talking about ADHD and a little bit about neurodiversity, just to update our listeners who might not be on the same page as us?
Okay, so when we're talking about neurodiversity, we are talking about this slightly different brain, a brain that just changed, that operates differently. So it's autism, it's ADHD, dyslexia, all manner of things. But with ADHD, what we're really looking at is, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And ADHD is quite often seen to be a discipline or a behavior problem. You know, quite a lot of the traits in ADHD are actually can be taken to be personality traits. And so actually you get this, oh, well, aren't we all a little bit ADHD? And, you know, whilst it's on a spectrum, I think the difference with ADHD is that, you know, A, it's something that's been present all your life, and that these traits are causing a real problem in your life. But also there are physiological differences as well. So, you know, there are differences in the brain. There's differences in how it functions, which I expect we'll get into more as we move along. But, you know, actual ADHD, our brains are different. They're not, you know, better or worse. We're not less intelligent. In fact, quite the opposite. But we are stuck and we can go round and round in circles. And so, you know, with an ADHD brain, there are physical differences as well.
I think that's a really common misconception. There's a stereotype. I certainly know when I was growing up, people talked about ADHD. It was something, those disruptive boys in the class that couldn't sit still. They fidgeted. They were always causing issues. And I don't think it was ever suggested that girls could have ADHD. Certainly when I was growing up, it was a very much a boy thing. And it was something that happened at school. And I don't know really what they ever thought happened to these boys when they became men and turned into grown adults. I don't know whether people thought that they grew out of it, or it was just always seen as this childlike boy syndrome that boys did at school, and they've got ADHD, they just give them a little bit of medication or Ritalin or something to calm them down and sort of stuff down their ADHD, and then they'll function normally and they won't be so much of a problem. I'm saying that in air quotes, because I think that's how people have perceived ADHD as.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the reason that it wasn't diagnosed in girls is because it wasn't diagnosed in girls, you know, until 1990, you know, there may have been the rare case, but generally it wasn't believed to be something that affected girls, and it was believed to be something that you grew out of. And so actually with regards to those boys, it was exactly thought that they would just grow out of it. And actually what we now know, because of changes, you know, in newer advances in neuroscience and a better understanding of what ADHD really is and how it presents. And even today, the real criteria that is used to diagnose ADHD is believed by most experts to be out of date, because we know so much more about it now, far more on the emotional side. But yeah, it wasn't really thought to be something that affected girls particularly, and it was something that you grew out of. And so a lot of girls, because they presented differently as well. So actually it's probably worth saying, you know, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is, you have three types of it now. So you have the predominantly hyperactive type, you have the predominantly inattentive type, and you have a combined type, which is what most of the population tend to be, is a mixture of the two. And the inattentive type is what was formerly known as ADD, but now it's got the H in it, because actually there is still the hyperactivity, but it's cognitive, or more cognitive, you know, so it's more the racing thoughts. You know, it's got the other traits about it, but actually the hyperactivity is very much more of an internal thing. And it's, you know, a lot of ADHDers will say they've never quite felt comfortable in their bodies. You know, those that don't aren't as aware. And quite often it can be that hyperactivity in your body that just, you always want to be moving forward. You always want to be moving on. And of course that's a lot easier to mask. And so for girls in school, you know, there's lots of reasons that they do still slip through the net. You're four times more likely to be diagnosed as a boy at school still, because of the different way it presents. So I think it's worth understanding that actually it can present very differently, very differently in all sorts of people.
So ADHD is one thing that can fall under this umbrella of neurodiversity, neurodivergence, which is what we touched on at the beginning. So other things would be dyspraxia, dyscalculia, dyslexia, people that have problems looking at words or numbers on screens, those sorts of things. It's because their brains are wired differently and they process information in a different way. But one of the things that I'm particularly fascinated about, and in fact, it's only come to light in the last sort of 12, 18 months, really, because I started my journey of making Pocket PA because of my daughter's own dyscalculia. And I didn't put it into a classification at that point as, oh, she's neurodiverse, she's not neurotypical. I put it into the fact that she couldn't understand numbers. We'd never diagnosed it. We've never gone formally for a diagnosis because, you know, it wasn't necessary. I knew that she had this issue, and I don't want to say problem, but she found numbers challenging and just in a jumble. And my son has had dyslexia all since school. And so he also didn't process things, but in a different way to Megan. And so that was my whole reason why I made Pocket PA, to help her to understand her numbers without getting caught up in spreadsheets. And I really just wanted to find a solution, because it didn't feel like there was anything tailoring to this group of people. But you have got an umbrella for helping people with ADHD, but there are crossovers with lots of things, I think, between people on autism and spectrum disorders like this. So yes, you don't need to have a formal diagnosis, is that right, to be able to classify yourself or to feel that you can get support from people that do reach out with ADHD support and coaching?
Yeah, absolutely not. Like, I now speak to a lot of women who are self, and men who are self-diagnosing later in life. And I think that for a lot of them, that moment, because they've known that something wasn't quite right all along, and that moment can be a real eureka moment. If you can get a diagnosis, a formal diagnosis, I do think it's worth doing. I think it helps with validation. I think it helps with self-compassion. And I also think it helps with getting help. You know, it does make it easier. And I also think that people come to a point where they first sort of like become aware of this, and then they want to know, they want to be sure for themselves, because often people will say to me, and I've got what I call a, you know, quite a good ADAR now. I can usually pick kind of if, you know, I'm quite aware of what it is. And so I find it relatively, I'm not a psychiatrist, obviously, but I find it quite easy to spot. And quite often people will say to me, oh, I've got all, you know, I've got this and I've got that and da, da, da. And they will sit there and describe ADHD to me to a T. And then they'll say, but, you know, maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe I just, you know, just need to get my stuff together and I just need to pull myself together. And so they gaslight themselves. So having that formal diagnosis, I think, is really valuable for any of those neurodiversities. And with regards to them, you know, they say like ADHD rarely travels alone. Quite often people with ADHD, part of discovering ADHD is discovering all of the other things that they may have gone through that are related. And the other part of it is eating disorders. You know, there's a huge correlation between ADHD and eating disorders, general anxiety disorder, and, you know, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, autism, all of these things to cross over. And, you know, I have to just say with the neurodiverse thing, I think that ultimately all human beings are neurodiverse because we're all different and our experiences shape our brains. And so actually, you know, when we talk about neurotypical, who is this neurotypical person? Because ultimately, you know, our environments affect us, our upbringings affect us, the stories we tell ourselves, the beliefs that we have, and how we've been raised and all of the things that come with that, our experiences, they shape us. And so actually what I also see is some people will have ADHD, but you know what? It hasn't been so tough for them because they've, you know, been in a good environment and they felt loved and they felt safe. And then others have been in an environment that's been chaotic, maybe being raised by undiagnosed ADHD parents or neurodiverse parents, to use that saying. And so actually, you know, it's ADHD is thought to be highly hereditary. So if you have a child as a mother, if your child has ADHD, you're 24 times more likely to have an ADHD, to have ADHD yourself. And so, but a lot of that is you grow up within certain families or we're in certain units and they shape how you sharpen. And stress is one of the biggest driving forces as to ADHD symptoms. You know, your ADHD will seem worse when you are stressed, when you have a lot going on in your life. And guess what we do as ADHDers? We always have a lot going on in our lives because we like to have things going on.
So one of the things that I've noticed a lot is that I feel, this might be wrong, but I feel that people with ADHD are more suited to working for themselves, moving into self-employment, being their own boss, that sort of thing, because they do find it difficult to be that square peg in that round hole of an employed role. Is that your experience also, that they are sort of have a better set of personality traits in one respect, but then they also face a lot of challenges because they go down that pathway into self-employment? So it's like a double-edged sword. They aren't that square peg to fit in the round hole. However, because of the things that come with ADHD, lots of things that are in self-employment can present as challenges to them.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. Where I trained, ADCA, the ADD Coaching Academy, who's like the guy that runs it, David, who's like, you know, arguably the leading ADHD coach in the world. He said, I believe that all entrepreneurs are a little bit ADHD, which I think is a pretty sweeping statement, to be honest. But I wouldn't say that I've particularly found that, but I've certainly found a high number of entrepreneurs can relate to ADHD or its symptoms. And, you know, I think that exactly that our brains are amazing for entrepreneurship and business. You know, we're fast thinking, we're ingenious, we fail fast and we get back up and we go again. We do have that drive. We're always moving forward. We think outside the box. You know, we're usually the people that can find the solutions to things. So, you know, we can do the big things. We can do the big things. It's the small day-to-day things that we struggle with a bit more. But give us big stuff, give us big picture, and we're absolutely flying. And so, you know, there is a lot of very successful business owners that are there, you know, thanks to ADHD.
And so just for a listener that might be sort of thinking, gosh, I felt a little bit different, how would they know? What would be the next steps? What would be something that they could do to start looking into it if they're curious about whether they, you know, the things that they've brushed off or put under the carpet, or as you say, gaslit themselves to think, oh, this is just how I am. What would you suggest that they could look into further? What are the signs that they could look for, or where could they go to find out definitively?
So I think the first thing to do is exactly look at the signs and really research what ADHD actually is. And, you know, you may find that there's more to ADHD than you even thought in the beginning, and it might really resonate with you. Or you might just, you know, I think it's safe to say as well with ADHD, and again, experts believe 75% to 85% of people with ADHD are not yet diagnosed. And so, you know, there's a lot of people probably walking around that have ADHD. But I think also we have to be really aware that our lifestyle nowadays can exacerbate ADHD type symptoms and those personality traits because of the way we live. And so, and as can perimenopause and menopause. So there's lots of things to take into consideration. But then it's to look at, you know, where you're struggling. You know, things to be looking at are easily distracted, struggling to focus, that physical or mental need to always be moving. But also there's the emotional dysregulation, so struggling with overwhelm, struggling with imposter syndrome, finding yourself going round and round in circles, you know, in life and in business, really. You know, quite often they can feel that they should be further on for all they do and how hard they work, or how, you know, but actually they just seem to go around in circles. And there'll be times in life when that's more apparent than others, because they'll, you know, they'll have amazing times as well. For women, generally teens tends to be led by hormones as well. So there are certain times when it can be difficult. But once you kind of look into what ADHD is, there's online tests that you can do. So there's if you just put and if you put in, for example, the NHS ADHD diagnosis, and put, you know, have a look at that and see where you are. But even, you know, I've known people come up on that and then not got a diagnosis. And I've also known people say, I don't relate to any of that, but then gone off and still got a diagnosis because actually there were symptoms. So,
okay. So if somebody is either self-diagnosed or they have had a diagnosis, if they're lucky enough to have got through a GP waiting list, which I know is horrendous at the moment, they're talking about 2 years being on a waiting list if you do go to see your GP.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you're living in a good area, or, you know, that postcode lottery sort of thing. You know, I've had up to 6 years, and I've had clients in my area send me copies of letters that they've had saying, just to let you know, we're just seeing people from 2018.
Gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So if they have self-diagnosed or they've had a formal diagnosis, what sort of things could you suggest as an elementary level on things that could help them, hacks, tricks? What could they start by doing that might begin to make a difference to, particularly if they're operating a small business, they're working for themselves and they feel they've got ADHD, what could be some of the things that they could implement to actually help them in their day-to-day tasks?
Okay, so the first thing has to be self-care, because if you are not looking after yourself, if you are not getting, you know, prioritizing your sleep, quite often many of the ADHDers that I work with will come and they'll say, you know, it gets to the end of the day and they're still wanting to do more. They still don't feel like they've got enough. So they're pushing back their sleep routine comes chaotic. Also, ADHDers can struggle to sleep anyway because of that hyperactivity. And so, you know, it's prioritizing good bedtime routines. It's eating well. You know, it's exercising, like 20 minutes of increased heart rate can give you, you know, 2-3 hours of focus. And so it has to start with those sorts of things. That is by far, given, you know, all the you know, I'll give you some things that you can use in terms of techniques, tools, tips and strategies, but all of those are pretty futile if you are not looking after yourself, because you have to be able to fuel your brain. And if you're not doing the things that do that, then you're going to be, you know, really starting on the back foot. So you want to be doing the things that are making sure, because, you know, we have a lack of dopamine, or we don't, you know, the messages in our brain get scrambled. And so what we want to be doing is increasing, you know, the neurotransmitters that help those function better. So serotonin, dopamine, and cortisol, neuroadrenaline. And so not cortisol, but cortisol, we want to be controlling that as well. So our stress hormone. And so the way we do that is by doing those things, by looking after us. That's certainly going to help. So that's the first thing. It has to start with self-care, stress management, you know, looking at what you actually are going to want to achieve that day. And very often, you know, we have these big long to-do lists, which have been proven to make procrastination even worse, because you end up doing the things that you like. Or for us, we want that quick dopamine hit. We love ticking off a task. So we'll pick the easy things. We'll pick the things that, you know, ADHD brains are not wired for importance. They're wired for interest. So we will always choose the interesting thing over the important thing if we're not, you know, not on our A game. And so what we want to do is, you know, pick three things that you're going to want to achieve that day. Three things that are your, you know, your things. And the most, you know, pick the three things that are going to move you forward in your business, not the three things that you, you know, ask yourself the question, am I doing this because it's important, or I'm doing this because it's interesting? You know, because we will do the interesting stuff, and the important stuff is the stuff that gets pushed back and back and back. And usually it's the important stuff that's going to move us forward in our businesses. So pick three things that you're going to do that day, and then ask yourself, are these the important things or the interesting things?
And how can you make the important things seem more interesting to an ADHDer? Is that the magic sauce?
That's a really good question. That is the magic sauce. And, you know, again, it's doing the self-care. So it's looking at as well as like, are you starting your day in ways to increase your dopamine, to get that head start? So, you know, it ideally, in an ideal world, it would be some exercise, without a doubt. That is by far the best way that you can start your ADHD brain, so that you can, you know, really utilize all of these things and make things more interesting, because you're going to have the dopamine. So, that's the first thing. You know, what do you love doing? First of all, do what you love doing. So basically, I have a, in the membership, we do body doubling. Well, we start off, they'll, you know, pick a song and listen to that song loud. Go and dance. Go and, if you like reading, start your day with reading. Start your day with the things that you like the most. Because actually, and set yourself a time. I have a deadline. It's like, right, I'm going to start work at this time. But what we need to do is fuel the brain. Once you've got the brain fueled up, then you've got, again, a better chance of doing the thing that you need to do. And then, you know, how do you make it interesting? Well, it's let's, you know, ultimately, I'll give you an example. When I wrote the book, and the editing phase of the book was like nails down a blackboard. It was so difficult. This book was like a boomerang. It just kept coming back. There was always more to do. Every time I thought it had gone. And, you know, I loved writing the book, but we're not great at finishing things off. And it was hard, and it was really, really dull and really difficult, because it wasn't interesting. And my ADHD brain, if I'm honest, was already on to the next thing. So actually having to sit and finish that was really, really challenging. And so how did I make it interesting? Well, you know, I had in my head, okay, do this and you will be an author. On, you know, I had this launch date, so I knew on the 22nd of September. And so I tried to, you know, and I focused on that. And I did the other things in between. But I also used hyper focus as well. That's another thing that we can use. But other things that you can use to kind of help you stay focused are brown noise. So brown noise in the background, which sounds kind of a bit like a waterfall or rustling of trees.
How is that different to white noise? I've not heard of brown noise before.
So it's you at the moment, I don't know the full background in it, but at the moment you've got all this array of coloured noises that people are talking about. And the brown noise is different to the white noise. I'm not sure. It's a different pitch or whatever. So it's said to be really quite relaxing. And actually I would have that on in the background when I was doing, and it just sounds like you're sitting next to a waterfall. But my husband, who is in air quotes neurotypical, came in and went, "Oh my God, what's that noise? How can you listen to that?" And I wasn't really listening to it. It's just on in the background. So brown noise, you just can Google it, and there's lots of it on YouTube.
So can I ask, do you think ADHDers and neurodiverse people prefer or need structure? Or is it structure in contained ways which are perhaps shorter time capsules than somebody else? And would you need to do you think variety is one of the key things to ensure that there's variety, short time slots, perhaps a reward at the end? Do all of those things match with things that would work better for somebody with ADHD?
Yeah, so I think, look, we need structure. Okay, structure. Without any structure, we can go off the rails. However, at the same time, we do find structure challenging. So the best thing that we can do is, first of all, looking at creating habits rather than structures, habits. Yeah. So maybe that your habit is that you wake up and for 20 minutes you dance around the kitchen like a lunatic, or you go for a run, or you read your, whatever it is, but you create good habits that can help you make it feel less like structure, more just like you, and that's what you do. But we do need structure, but also I think that we need to understand that there are times when our brain just kind of goes offline, and that actually those are the times that the best thing we can do is go and do something we love. For me, I will go and grab my dog and go and walk my dog. I know that I'm, two birds with one stone. I'm firing up my dopamine. I'm getting in nature, which is really, really good for us. I'm taking that pause. I'm taking that time out. And giving myself some space doing something I love, or maybe go and phone a friend or whatever. When our brains do that, and we fatigue easily, more easy than most in a lot of ways, because our brains use so much energy because they're always on the go. And for many of us, our bodies use a lot of energy as well. And so when that happens, to get you back on track as quickly as possible, rather than sitting at your computer just trying and trying and trying and trying, and a 15-minute task taking 2 hours, you do much better to go and phone your friend for 5 minutes, or watch an episode of something. Or you've got to be careful because we get hyper focused, so you've got to have some boundaries around that. But actually understanding that, so for me, for example, my structure is I work, I go and exercise in the mornings, I start work about 10 o'clock ish usually. I know that between about 3 and 5, I'm not really that great. So I'll do stuff like, I'll do a bit of housework, or I'll phone a friend or whatever I'll do. And then I come back to work a little bit later, but I don't work in the evenings. By 7 o'clock, I'm done.
I think that's what's a really nice thing when you're self-employed, to be able to have that flexibility. And I think that's why one of the great reasons why neurodiverse people sometimes fit better into self-employed roles, because they have that flexibility to be able to recognize when they have those periods where they don't operate so well, like you said, in the afternoon, where you've got that flexibility and you can shoehorn your work around those times and increase productivity when you are fired up. So I think that that's a really useful takeaway.
I think also have to be quite mindful of that, though, because that can also be our nemesis, that there isn't that structure. We can do what we like, and so we do have to be be on our guard with that as well.
Yeah. Now you've got your book, I know Square Pegs, I can see it behind you, which has come out recently and done incredibly well. What's it got in there, Kim, that could help people that might be listening today to be able to take that first step as to be able to start to understand more or find some ways that they could help manage their ADHD?
So the book is Square Pegs, a book of self-discovery for women with ADHD. And it really is written for those women who have spent their life kind of trying to keep up and trying to fit in, and often have had late diagnosis or maybe are just coming and becoming aware of ADHD. It's not, I say it's not a book on ADHD. You're not going to, if you've read other books, you're not going to learn anything new about ADHD as such, because that I'm not the person to write that book. This is a book that goes through the journeys with that I've gone through with many clients over the years. Like I say, I've been coaching for 17 years and officially ADHD for a year, unofficially for 4 years when my couple of high flying clients got diagnosed, which opened a real Pandora's box. But then I realized that unknowingly I've been coaching ADHD for about 17 years because I've been helping with people with burnout and confidence and diet and feeling good and you know, sleep issues and all of those things. And so actually what the book is about is the fact that when you live that long undiagnosed, the stories and the beliefs that you have, that you tell yourself around yourself, can be really quite unhelpful and can hold you back, and it can make you struggle with confidence and all of those things. So it really is a book about, you know, a coaching book about working through that and how best to kind of let go of that. It's got stuff about ADHD in it, of course. There's you know, we talk about why ADHD is different in females as well, the female, you know, because our brains and our hormones. But yeah, it's a book that I'm really, really passionate about because it's something that I've seen in my clients for many years.
So it's a really great starting point, I think, for a lot of people, particularly if it's this whole concept or idea is new to them or they don't know much about it, could be a great starting point.
And I would say men can read it as well. I just, you know, my husband's like, why can't men read it? But I just...
You made it for ladies. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk about hormones and menopause and all of those things. So,
I'm sure there's lots of crossover. That's so good. Thanks so much, Kim. Thanks for sharing all of that with us today. So if our listeners would like to find out more specifically about you and how you support people and how they can connect with you, what's the best place for them to go? Where can they find you?
So I'm on Instagram as the Entrepreneur's ADHD Coach. And I have a Facebook group called ADHD Brains in Business, which is open to any kind of one in business. And, you know, even if you're in a corporate environment, anyone that just wants to do better in business, whether you're self-diagnosed or diagnosed or just curious, you can come over and find us that. So that's ADHD Brains in Business. And that's my Facebook group, which is probably kind of the best place to start. And then I have a membership that is called the ADHD Business Collective, which is more sort of around accountability, et cetera. And you can come and join us there.
Great. I'll put all the links to those in the show notes. So anyone that wants to connect with Kim and just to find a little bit more, the notes and everything will be in the show notes. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week ahead. And I will catch up with you again next week for another episode of Earn More, Stress Less.
Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.